I'd like for us to begin this morning by reading 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 13 to 20, and then 1 Peter 5, verse 12, and I hope Savannah pays attention. 1 Peter chapter 2. Let's start with verse 13. Therefore, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme, or to governors as to those who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and for the praise of those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. As free, yet not using liberty as a cloak for vice, but as bondservants of God. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. For this is commendable if, because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it when you are beaten for your faults? You take it patiently. But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow his steps. Then turn to chapter 5. Turn the page to chapter 5. Let me read verse 12, where Peter writes, "By Silvanus, our faithful brother, as I consider him, I have written to you briefly, exhorting and testifying that this is the true grace of God in which you stand." Now, Peter there is making a statement in chapter 5, verse 12, about the passage I just read in chapter 2, verses 13 to 20. And there are three things that Peter wants us to remember about what he wrote back in chapter 2 and elsewhere in the book of 1 Peter. He says it is a communication. It was something he had written. Writing is one of the means by which we communicate. Now, we sometimes communicate by speaking. Sometimes we communicate by showing. I might put a picture up for you to look at. But often we communicate by writing. And so Peter has written, God has primarily communicated with men, not through speaking, not through showing, but through writing. And Peter tells us this communication that he has written is a condensation. He says, I have written briefly. That word briefly, in the form that Peter uses in chapter 5, verse 12, only appears one other place in the New Testament. And interestingly, it occurs in connection with an incident Peter's involved with. Back in Acts chapter 12, verse 18, when Herod had locked up Peter and was intending to put Peter to death for no other reason than that Peter was a Christian, God sends an angel to get Peter out of jail. And when the guards get up that morning and when they discover that Peter is missing, the text says there was no small dissension. There was nothing small, nothing little about the uproar that ensued. It was a big deal that Peter was gone, had escaped. But Peter says, this is just a little letter that I'm sinning. This is brief. This is a summation of what everything I say is about. And so this communication, which is a condensation or a summation, is also an explanation, Peter says, of the true grace of God. And that's where I was wanting to get to there in verse 12 of chapter 5. Peter describes his entire letter as being an explanation of the true grace of God. Now, when we're in chapter 1, we can understand that. In chapter 1, verse 18, verse 19, Peter writes, "We were not redeemed with corruptible things. We were redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot." We can understand how the death of Christ deals with grace. The shedding of Christ's blood. There is a fountain filled with blood, drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners washed beneath the flood lose all their guilty stains. We can understand how that is an expression of God's grace, that to be washed in the blood of Christ, to be baptized into Christ and be forgiven, that's an act of grace. But how does the passage I began with, verses 13 to 20, that talks about submission, how is that about the true grace of God? And that's what we're going to try to figure out and understand this morning. Now, the word grace always refers to a gift. Grace is the giving of something. God gave His Son to die for us, John 3:16. We understand how the death of Christ is a grace, but it's expected of Christians that we live like Christ, that we walk like Christ. Peter even says we are to grow in grace in his second epistle. And hopefully this morning by our study from 1 Peter chapter 2, 13 to 20, we'll understand some ways by which we are to grow into the true grace of God. With that said, let me point out that verses 13 to 20 are comprised of two paragraphs. Each paragraph begins with a command to submit, to be in submission. But there is a key verse in each paragraph, which is not the first verse of the paragraph, but the key verse of each paragraph begins with the same three words. The key verse of the first paragraph is verse 15. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. The key verse of the second paragraph is verse 19. For this is, the same three words, for this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. So there are the two paragraphs. Both involve submission. They describe two obligations that we have as a child of God. And in carrying out these obligations, we're going to understand we are walking by grace. The first obligation, verse 15, is that we are to silence the fool. The second obligation, verse 19, is that we are to serve the cruel. So there are our two points this morning. The child of God is called upon to silence the fool, and he's called upon to submit to serve the cruel. So let's go to verse 15. Here's why verse 15 is the key to verse 13 through 17. Verse 15 explains what the point of verses 13 to 17 is. We are to put to silence, by doing good, the ignorance of foolish men. Now, foolish men like to accuse good men of all sorts of things. Peter makes reference to this back up in verse 12 when he talks about how Gentiles speak against Christians as being evil people. And this is a timely statement, because there's as much evil spoken against the church of God today as there was in the time of Peter. There are people today who would say about this group of individuals right here that we are guilty of hate speech, that we are racist, that we are xenophobic, that we are homophobic, that we are just stupid people who don't have the good sense to know how to raise our own children, so the government needs to take our kids from us and give our kids a proper education about all these things. That's the kind of stuff that's being said about us today. And that kind of stuff is being said out of ignorance. Now, it may be the person saying that is ignorant just because they haven't been taught any better. Or it may be that they are ignorant because they are willfully ignorant. Peter talks about those who are willfully ignorant in 2 Peter chapter 3. They should know better, but they just don't want to know better. Now, what are we going to do about people like that who want to spread lies and slanders and calumnies about the Church of God? What's to be done about people like that? Are we going to shut them up by force or by favor? Peter says we are to put to silence their ignorant talk. The word put to silence is a word that means to muzzle, to shut the mouth. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 9, you do not muzzle the ox that treads out the corn. And so our job as Christians is to silence the ignorant. And how are we going to do that? We're going to do that by doing good, by blameless conduct. Our good living, our good lives, our good example is how God intends for ignorant people to be shut up. That's the principle. Now, verses 13 through 17 are going to give us the application. And Peter's going to start out by talking about the fact that one way by which we silence evil speakers of us is by being good citizens, by being good subjects. Verse 13, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. By being a good citizen, we can put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. Now, Paul agrees with Peter about this. Turn back to 1 Timothy chapter 2. I just want to read one verse. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Look at verse 1 and 2 and see if you don't agree with me that Paul and Peter are on the same page. 1 Timothy 2 verse 1. Therefore I exhort, first of all, that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Timothy, this is what you as a Christian minister are to teach the church. In regard to the government, first of all, you tell the church to pray for your government. You pray for kings, you pray for all who are in authority. You know why you're to pray for them, Timothy? Because the government is established by God and upheld by citizens. Every government, every authority that exists in this world is established by God. It's upheld by citizens. It takes good citizens to uphold civil jurisdictions. And Paul and Peter both agree in saying that we as Christians are to be good citizens upholding civil jurisdictions because we know those civil jurisdictions were authorized by God and were established by God. And the purpose of these governments, whether kings, governors, judges, sheriffs, dog catchers, the purpose of these is to punish the evil and to praise the good. And if you understand what Peter says there in verse 14, you've got all the civics you need to know. I took civics in high school. Civics has to do with government and citizens and civil life. If you understand that God established government, and the job of government is to punish evildoers and to praise well-doers, you know all the government you need to know. And it's by obeying the laws of the government that we are doing the right thing, the good thing, and can put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. Now you may be thinking, as Christians, are we only to obey the government when the laws they pass embrace and reflect Christian values? Are those the laws we're to obey? And if they enact a law or pass a mandate that is at odds with Christian ethics and principles, are we to ignore those? Well, I tell you what, our tax money is used For many things we think are downright wrong and satanic and evil. They take money from us. The government expects us to send money, and they take our money and they use it to kill babies. They take our money and use it to promote perversity. They take our money and use it to advertise and enable blasphemy. But I still pay my taxes. God, in Romans chapter 12, says, you leave the avenging to me. You leave the dealing with corrupt government to me. The government, even when it's gone rogue, even when it's gone bad, is still something that I authorize. And so, folks, as a Christian, I pay my taxes, even when I know my taxes are being used to promote non-Christian views. I don't tell the school board, I'll start paying my property tax when you drop evolution in your science classes and start teaching creationism. I've never told the school board that. Now, I have a lot to say about evolution, against evolution and for creation, but I still pay my taxes. At the very time Peter wrote what he wrote here, Nero was the emperor. He was the Caesar. Do you think every law Nero passed, every enactment of Nero was consistent with Christian values? And yet Peter does not call upon some sort of riot or overthrow. He says, honor the king. At the very time, Nero is the king. Why honor the king, Peter? Because the king, the government, is of God. And Peter does not write any diatribe against Nero or urge the church to political action. Paul says, pray for the government. Peter says, honor the government. And that includes all forms of government. That includes the incompetent post office worker. That includes the rude TSA officer at the airports. That includes the clerk at the driver's license who got up on the wrong side of the bed and wants to take it out on you. At all levels of authority, we are to be good citizens. And being a good citizen means we are informed, we are involved, we are interceding. To be a good citizen, we need to know what's going on. To be a good citizen, we need to be involved. How can we be salt and light in the community if we're not involved? And most of all, we need to be interceding. Pray for all who are in authority. You know, we've got different levels of courts in this land, and sometimes people are fighting something out in a lower court, and they spend a lot of money, and they get judgments against it, and finally it gets to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court steps in and overturns everything that had gone on in the lower courts. Well, God says, take it to the highest court. Take it to me. Pray to me. The Supreme Court only gets involved when the proper channels have been followed and a case has been filed with them. That's when they get involved. When we pray, we're getting God involved. We're following the proper channel. We're taking matters to God. We need to be praying more. Now, are there exceptions to anything I've just said? The answer is yes. It's impossible to walk two directions at the same time. And exceptions become involved when the state, when the government forces a believer to choose between obeying man or obeying God. And here are the biblical exceptions. Exodus chapter 1. Pharaoh orders that Hebrew baby boys be murdered, thrown into the Nile, into the river. And the midwives refused to do it. They were in disobedience. Daniel chapter 3. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They had been told to bow down to a statue of the king. They refused to do it. Daniel chapter 6. Daniel had been told, you're not allowed to pray to your God. And that even applied to praying in the privacy of your own home. Not even in the privacy of your home are you to pray to God. And Daniel disobeyed that. And in Acts chapter 4, Peter and John are called in by the Jewish authorities. They are commanded not to teach or preach in the name of Jesus. And Peter said, whether we ought to obey man more than God, you decide. We're going to obey God. When the authorities ask us to bow to men in a way we're only to be bowing to God, we cannot do both at one and the same time. We've got to make a choice. And we're going to choose to follow God. But in every other way, we live as free men. And that doesn't mean we have the license to pick and choose which laws we're going to obey. That means we're going to use our liberty as the bond servants of God. So that's what Peter says. We never forget the fact that whatever we're doing in regard to the government, we're doing because God expects us to. There are laws I don't disobey. Not because I don't want to disobey them, but because God tells me to obey them. You know, there are times we're forced to give honor to the king. Like when you go into a courtroom, if you don't stand up when the judge walks in, if you don't show honor to him that way, you're in trouble. But we're to stand up at all times because God tells us to, and God's watching. God always knows the kind of citizen we're being to the government that he has established. So our first job is to silence the fool. And we do that by submitting, by giving deference and obedience to someone who doesn't deserve it. You see now why submission is a grace? Grace is a gift. Grace is giving something to someone. We give obedience. We give respect to people who don't deserve it. And in acting that way, we're acting by grace. Now look at the second paragraph, beginning in verse 8. The key verse is verse 19. For this is commendable because of conscience toward God. One endures grief, suffering wrongfully. Now, you see what Peter's doing here? He is moving through the various institutions that God has put in place. Peter in verse 9 starts out talking about the church. Then in verse 13, he talks about the government. Now in verse 18 and following, he's talking about what we would call going to work. He's talking about business. In chapter 3, verse 1, he's going to talk about marriage. These are God-ordained institutions that Peter is just moving through, and he's telling us how we ought to act in every one of these. And what does he say here in verse 19? He says it's commendable. I'm going to come back to that word in a minute. He says it's commendable if we bear up under unjust suffering. What counts, Peter says, is not that we just put up with something, but that we bear up when treated unjustly and continue to do the right thing. Dietrich Bonhoeffer is considered a hero. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a German Lutheran pastor who opposed Hitler, who was arrested in 1943, and he was hung at the order of Hitler, along with some others, within a month of Hitler committing suicide in 1945, April 1945. And he is often cited as an individual in the 20th century who was arrested unjustly, who was punished unjustly, but who considered his fate something that was honoring to God. And so Peter in verse 18, look at this now. Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear. Have you ever had a boss that you just loved, that you really respected, that you were always working hard for, always showing respect to? We have bosses like that. Peter says, not only to the good and gentle. Don't be a hard worker, a respectful worker, just to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh. The King James says, to the froward. The Greek word here is scoliosis. And some of you have probably heard of that word. It often refers to a curvature of the spine. And here's a person who in their moral spine is just crooked. There's no straightness to them. Peter said, save yourselves from this untoward, this crooked generation. And some people are crooked. And Peter says, even when your boss is crooked in his dealings with you, in his managerial skills, in his handling of something, you're going to submit to him. And the word that he uses here in verse 18, servants, is not the usual Greek word for servant. This is the word that talks about household servants, what we would call domestics. And back in the first century, many household slaves or servants were people today who would be in white collar jobs. Some of those slaves in a great Roman household back then may have been managers. Like Henry's got a farm manager he works with. That guy's in a very responsible position. Those Roman estates, they had managers. They had doctors to take care of everybody. They had teachers. And they had tutors for the children. And so many of these servants, they were slaves, they were highly educated, highly responsible, highly trained, but at the end of the day, they were still slaves. And even though you work a 9-to-5 job, you may be in a situation where you feel like a slave. Peter says, in those situations, the Christian is going to submit. Even when you've got a bad boss. Even when you've got a boss who doesn't pay you what you're worth, who doesn't treat you right, who blames you for everything, you're going to submit. He says in verse 20, Peter does, for what credit is it? If you get in trouble, and you deserve to get in trouble, there's nothing commendable about that. He says if you're punished, if you're disciplined, if you're fired because you've done something wrong, you don't go away saying, what a good boy am I after that. No, you're a good boy. Peter says you've done the right thing. You've done the commendable thing. When you continue to serve and work and labor, despite the fact you're in harsh, unfair conditions. And the word Peter uses, you see the word commendable there in verse 19? For this is commendable. You see the word commendable at the end of verse 19? If you're treated unfairly, but you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. In both places, the word translated commendable is the Greek word grace. This is grace when you continue to do the right thing, even though you're in a terrible situation. This is grace when you continue to work hard for a boss, you ought to tell, take this job and you walk out. When you stay in a job like that, that's grace. And with God, that is commendable. Now let me ask you to turn to Luke 6. And I want you to note in verse 20 in my New King James translation, Peter says, for what credit is it? Now keep that in mind. Luke 6, verse 32, 33, and 34. This is Christ. And Peter was paying attention this day when Christ said these words. Verse 32. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. You see what Christ is saying here? If we only speak to people who speak to us, if I only send Christmas cards to those who send me a Christmas card, There's no credit in that. I mean, if they're scratching my back and I scratch theirs, that's nothing commendable. That's nothing noteworthy. If I only lend money to people whom I expect will pay me back. Now that's a bank, right? Not only does the bank expect you to pay them back when they loan you money, they expect you to pay them more than they gave you. And if you'll promise to give them more than they gave you, they will make you a loan. But Christ says, that's just business. That's just the way of the world. But if you loan to someone knowing you're going to write it off as a complete loss, now that's something. That's something. Rodney Dangerfield said his bank's motto was, unless you have a friend, he said, I missed one car payment, my friend took my car. That's the way it is with banks. But Christ says we're to love our enemy. And we're to do for the unlovely and the unlovable what they don't deserve. But we're going to do for them what they don't deserve because that's what God calls us to. He loved His enemies. He calls upon us to love our enemies. There's to be that family likeness between Him and between us to where we're going to give to someone who does not deserve the gift we're giving them. We're going to give a gift to them. And you know why we're going to do it? You know why we're going to be obedient to wicked governments? And why we're going to work hard for ungrateful and evil employers? Because we ourselves are ungrateful and wicked and evil, and we expect God to show grace to us. I mean, who are we to not talk to someone because we're miffed at them? Who are we to walk down this side of the aisle when someone's sitting over here I don't want to have to look at or talk? Who are we to act like that? You understand, don't you, that every time we pray, forgive us our debts, we're asking God to write off as a loss a loan we took out and have not repaid. You understand that, right? That's what grace does, though. Grace writes it off. And grace treats us like we paid it in full. That's the true grace of God. When we submit, when we obey, when we serve those unwilling of our service. Now next week, Lord willing, verses 21 to 25, we'll talk about the ultimate example of what we've looked at this morning.